Are you looking for smoking hot local singles in your area? Well, look no further. Tune in Thursdays at 11:30 for the Release Radar Rundown with great singles released by local Kingston artists, a program made possible in partnership with the Kingston Music Office and our friends at Modern City Taxi. We've got something for everyone with great music across genres made by musicians in our community. Join in the fun. Release Radar Rundown, Thursdays, 11:30 a.m., right here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
It's Thursday morning, 10 a.m. here in the city of Kingston, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM. Coming up next, we've got the freshest new music, courtesy of Earshot Daily.
Featuring the latest songs from artists in Canada and from around the world.
Hosted by DJs from coast to coast to coast.
30 minutes of Canada's newest music downloaded exclusively from the Earshot's digital distribution system.
You're listening to
Earshot Daily. Earshot Daily.
Hello
Earshot
and welcome Daily. To this episode of Earshot Daily. I'm Ted Evans from Kingston, Ontario. I play in a band called The Meringues and another one called Shook Planet. I'm happy to be here hosting another episode of Earshot Daily. I love finding new songs on the Earshot distribution system, new artists, ones I haven't even heard before, picking out a few songs and then playing them here for you. I've got a pretty eclectic mix for you today. We're going to switch genres a couple times as we make our way through the show. We'll start off today with a song by Evan Redsky. This one's called Taking Shape. Here, take a listen.
Thank you.
Listen up, Canada.
Listen up, Canada.
This is your show on your station.
Canada's Earshot Daily.
That song was called In Every Town by A Family Curse. I'm Ted Evans from Kingston, Ontario. I play in a band called The Meringues and another one called Shook Planet. I'm here spinning a bunch of great songs and artists from all across Canada that I found on earshot-distro.ca. If you're an artist out there, definitely go on there, submit your tunes, and then there's DJs and hosts all across Canada that can find your tunes easily and play them on their shows as well. So if you've heard me host the show before, you know that's what I like to do, is just hop on the distribution system, find a bunch of songs that I like and that I think you're going to like, and I'll play them here on the show. Let's jump back into the music now. This next one is called I Wish It Were Real by Mark McLaughlin, here on Earshot Daily.
I
Earshot Daily on demand. It's easy.
Go to earshot-daily.ca today.
Or any other day. That's what on demand means. But you knew that. Okay, let's get back to the show.
Let's get back to the show.
There's an artist I've played on the show before. That's Brat Boy and their song Drowning here on Earshot Daily. I'm Ted Evans from Kingston, Ontario. I play in a band called The Meringues and another one called Shook Planet. I'm going to move along to another artist I've played on the show before. This is Sheena Coe and her song Eyes of the Ego. Here, check it out.
Earshot Daily is played on stations coast to coast to coast.
For a complete list of stations, hosts, and playlists, or to listen to the show on demand,
visit earshot-daily.ca. Hey.
Each day. in the right place. I'm only human, I made my mistakes. Why you all up in my face? I am certain that I don't deserve this. I don't deserve this.
I should be enough.
Should be enough.
I should be enough.
Should be enough.
With the good and the bad and at the end of each day.
We can give. If that's not madness, I sure don't know what is. A red flag, a loud message. Let's admit there's no understanding, no understanding. I should be enough. I should be enough. With the good and the bad, and at the end of each day, I should be.
That was Tina Leon with I Should Be Enough here on Earshot Daily. I'm Ted Evans from Kingston, Ontario. I play in a band called The Meringues and another one called Shook Planet. Today on the show, we flipped through a bunch of genres and checked in a bunch of cities across Canada. We heard from Evan Redsky and his song Taking Shape. We heard In Every Town by A Family Curse. There was Mark McLaughlin with his song I Wish It Were Real. We heard Drowning by Brat Boy. There was Sheena Coe with Eyes of the Ego. And once again, right there, that was Tina Leon with I Should Be Enough. I've got time for one more song on the show today, or two really short ones. So I think that's what I'm going to do. I've got two pretty quick songs here from a group called Mad Ones. We'll close off today's show with their song Molly Moth. But this first one, only about a minute and a half long, is called Hydra Head. This is Mad Ones on Earshot Daily. Hope you enjoyed the show today.
on Earshot's digital distribution system.
This is a journey into sound.
Hear it now on Earshot Daily.
Listening to the Earshot Daily,
heard across the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
For more information, visit earshot-distro.ca and support community radio at ncra.ca.
Until tomorrow, or Monday if it's Friday.
This is Noelle.
Hi, Dave.
I host the Black Alternative on CFRC 101.9. where we highlight alternative music, diasporic belonging, and all the black sheep making music they're not supposed to. Tune in to listen to me every Wednesday at 3 p.m.
Welcome. You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. My name is Cindy. This is Absolutely Frivolous. Welcome, welcome, welcome. School is starting. Frosh Week is starting. My nieces are off to school again. Oh my gosh. There's always a little bit of tension around Kingston when this starts. Every September. And I love it. I live for it because I remember those days. And it's so exciting, and especially for the first years. I hope you have a good year. I hope you have a good 4 years if that's what you're planning to do instead of three. I don't know. But please enjoy your time here at Queen's and those at RMC and St. Lawrence College, too. Have a great, great time. It's a wonderful learning, growing. If you don't grow from going to university, I don't know. There's something about you then. Do try to experience things, scary stuff. Just challenge yourself. It's worth it, honestly. You're at an age where people expect you to be maybe making a few mistakes. So, go with it. I'm so old. I'm just like, I'm going to give you some wise words of advice because I've been doing it with my nieces, like on the down low anyway. I'm really not bugging them too much, but it's just so fun. And I'm just excited for this time of life for all of you starting out at university and college again. All right. This is actually a comedy show. I'm not funny. I like to host this show and play funny stuff. That's the goal. If you're tuning in for the first time, Absolutely Frivolous has been on the air for 23 years almost. Yep. In December, it'll be 23 years. No. Yes. I always can't remember because way back then when I started, I was covering other shows. So I think my show started in December of 2003, or I started and the show started in January 2004, which I think is what actually happened now that I look back. It's awesome to be here. If you want to volunteer here, go to cfrc.ca. I didn't think I'd be here this long at all, but I love coming here. I love the environment. I love the community. People are great here, or you don't even have to deal with them if you don't want to, which is also super nice if you're a little bit of an introvert like myself. So yeah, come on down to the station and say hello if you'd like. And if you want to volunteer, you're welcome to find out all the information on cfrc.ca and how to apply. And you don't have to be on the air. You can do all kinds of behind the scenes stuff. We need people to do the behind the scenes stuff. And while we have some amazing staff here that do go above and beyond for the very little money that they're paid, and we treasure them dearly. And thank you again. As I always try to say, thank you all to the CFRC staff. They're amazing. And those people that like just come for a season as well and work with us and do work study programs. Thank you. So helpful. This is why this station has been going on for more than 100 years. It's the community support. It's the university support, all that kind of thing. Anyway, so just a little note again, as I always try to start my show. If anything I'm playing is offensive in any way, I've forgotten to bleep a swear word, or that the topic might not be to your liking, which does happen. Not everybody's sense of comedy or humor is the same. We apologize for offending you. We didn't mean to do that here at CFRC and Absolutely Frivolous. It just happens. And it's, you know, it's not just my show. There's a whole bunch of shows that we try to do our best to educate, enlighten, or make you laugh in my case. But everybody's different and things are changing all the time in the world. And we do our very best here at the station to do what's right for our audience and our community, whether it be the university community or Kingston surrounding area communities. CFRC is always trying to do its best. And I will leave you with that. I only have one comedian today, Robbie Hoffman. She's a fellow Montrealer. And she's going to talk about Montreal and her family. And she's, I guess she grew up here in Montreal. And but she's American. So I don't know how that works exactly, but I'm glad she loves Montreal like I do. Here she is, Robbie Hoffman, on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Hey, this is Begonia, and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM.
Is the STM, Société de Transport de Montréal, our subway system. Has anybody here seen the recent MetroCard designs? Yeah. Less seats, anyone? Now, I can understand where less seats might be helpful if they allowed more people to fit on the metro cars. But have you ever noticed how many more people can fit into a metro car when you remove one seat? Zero. Not one more person. Considering the seat is about a foot by a foot, there's no difference in how many more people you can fit onto a metro car when you remove one seat. So now, instead of sitting on your good-for-nothing metro ride, a person must stand in a spot where a seat once was. Now you might be saying, Robbie, aren't you being a little ridiculous over such a trivial issue? And to that I say no. No, I am not. Seating concerns run long in my family tradition. My great uncle Ed took this very seriously. See, I was just a girl when my family and I were uprooted from New York in the aftermath of my parents' divorce. We came here like many generations before us, penniless and determined. With nowhere to go, my great uncle Ed took my mother, my 9 siblings, and I into his home. They just don't build folk like that anymore. Now, Uncle Ed's big mission was bus stop seating. He could not stomach driving by and watching old ladies standing as they awaited for the bus, especially in the winter. So before each day began, at 5 o'clock in the morning, there was Uncle Ed bustling through the streets of Montreal in search of chairs or chair parts left in the driveways of people's houses for garbage. He'd collect as many as he could, then hop back into his car and on his way back home, drop off chairs he had assembled the day before at several key bus stops. Quote from the Montreal Gazette, Thursday, December 9th, 1999. Plain. Playing mysterious version of musical chairs. The mysterious chairman of Côte de Neige. And I quote, he always strikes at dawn. That, at least, eyewitnesses can agree on. Roaring through the streets of Côte de Neige in his cluttery old car, the chairman comes to a stop at the streets of Plamondon, Victoria, pulls out half a dozen chairs from his car, sets them in a neat row at the bus stop, gets back into his car, and roars away. A few days later, a city truck drives up, throws the chairs into the truck, then drives away. A few days later, the chairman drops off a new batch of chairs. This city removes them. The chairman brings more chairs. The city takes them away. A few days later, city employees drop off 2 benches. The chairman acknowledges the benches by dropping off a few less chairs. Is the chairman crazy then? Who knows? Maybe the guy's protesting, says the cabbie across the street. Look, there's a bench over here and a bench over there, but no bench right here. So maybe he's wanting equal opportunity for the benches. Is the mysterious chairman of Côte de Neige a patron of the 160 bus? Is he an equal opportunity bench activist? Are his 4 legs planted firmly on the ground? Uncle Ed would be home by 7:30 a.m. in time to drop us off to school. The worst was when he involved us. Many times I'd be sitting with a chair on top of me pleading. He'd drop me off a block sooner. But why am I telling this story to you today? What relevance is this? I think it's important to know that I am blood related to this man. This is somebody I am a descendant of. They say you ought to know where you come from in order to know where you're headed. And as much as I try and fight it, I feel his pain. The other day when I got into Montreal and I took this the STM in this beautiful city of ours, I was standing by an older woman who stood in a spot where a seat once was. I heard Uncle Ed's cry from beyond the grave. Give the woman a seat. For shame. If Uncle Ed could see the STM now removing seats week after week. One morning as we had our Cheerios in the kitchen, Uncle Ed barged through the kitchen with this Montreal Gazette article above his head. Lo and behold, validation, recognition, Uncle Ed had made it to the paper. So who was the mysterious chairman? My great Uncle Ed, the equal seating opportunity activist. It's so nice to be back here. You know, anybody besides women, obviously, today, celebrating anything? Any birthdays or anniversaries? Any divorces? Okay, no, I suppose I'll start. I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I do come from a very large family. I have 9 siblings. I have 5 brothers and 4 sisters. My parents were Hasidic, so had all 10 of us within 12 years. I actually asked Mama how she had all those kids, and the only thing she said to me was, I don't know, it seems every time I went to bed, I woke up pregnant. Ooh. That is the grossest thing I have ever heard. Mama's only 53, but I feel like she was born in 1911. She still refers to women by their marital status. She'll be like, you remember Cheryl, divorcee? Carolyn, spinster, never married? What? How old is that word? Oh, heavens to Betsy. When interviewed some time ago, a journalist asked me if I thought women were funny. To me, that's like asking, are people funny? Being a stage performer, it's practically impossible to separate what I do from who I am doing it. I'm a comedian who happens to be female. And I'm a comedian because it's all I can be. I tried being an accountant and I tried suppressing my understanding of life, but unfortunately failed. The ideas and words in my head have blurted out onto the stage where suddenly they've become understood. Suddenly, people understand that coworkers are, in fact, without the shadow of a doubt, the worst kind of people in the world. Comedy is not about a joke or one story, but a collective of my life. The stage understands me and is where I'd like to live. Remember that old lady who lived in a shoe? She had all those kids, she didn't know what to do? That rhyme was based on my mother. With that, how could I have not become a comedian? But practically speaking, I did put myself through McGill University to get a cushy accounting job, which ironically was a poor decision given I'm a comedian. But comedy chooses you, I think. I mean, what sound-minded woman would choose to get up night after night on stages splattered with imaginary semen and sweaty microphones? Couldn't I have just enjoyed a regular day job? I'd have liked that, really. Comedy is hard and subjective, too. It's not a race, it's a marathon. Success is a product of hours of stage time. No comedian is spared this journey. There is no easy way to the top. But now is also the moment for women in comedy. There are more female-led sitcoms and features than ever before. See, back in the day, a female comedian might receive the odd, "Oh, you're funny," but it was usually followed by, "For a girl." I've been told I'm pretty for a lesbian, but that's for another day. But absent are the elaborate, credit-heavy introductions that men would receive when they were brought to the stage, i.e., this next comic has appeared at the Boston Comedy Festival. Please welcome to the stage, Jack Reynolds. This was thrown out the window when a woman was brought to stage and simply replaced with, "This next girl up." Now, why was I asked here today to tell my story? It's nothing special, but I'm happy to tell it, and you'll infer from it what you want. In the fourth grade, we had a pop quiz on a short story we had read together as a class. The quiz was easy, super straightforward, 10 questions on the story we just read. Only problem with the quiz was that I wasn't paying attention during it. I was daydreaming about God knows what, so literally had not a clue what it was about. Panicked, I stared at the page, scribbled my name on the top corner. Who knows, sometimes they awarded part marks for simply writing your own name. And then it hit me. I could enter in the space for the answers made up Chinese pictographs. Who's to say they're wrong? So that's what I did. I was a bit of a strange kid, and as a kid, I used to like to study the Childcraft language book, memorizing letters from other languages, even though their meaning still remains a mystery to me. Of course, we got the quizzes back, and I had a big red zero on mine with "come see me," no part marks for my name. I took my quiz, I walked up to my teacher, head held high. "But who's to say they're wrong?" I pleaded. "You never gave quiz instructions. You never said the answers had to be in English. Until we get a Chinese translator in here, we don't know that they're wrong." That energy, I never grew out of. Comedy ambitions never came easy, but that energy keeps me going. Ultimately, my TEDx talk is about another thing and how all these things eventually have meaning for doing other things in your life. Another thing? What do you mean, you're asking? What thing and why another? Over the course of my life, I've always questioned how many other things I can take. Every time another thing happens to me, I go, "Really? God, why me?" For instance, when I first fell in love with a girl and discovered I was gay, I was in shock. Really? Another thing? On top of it all? Not only was I born to a mother who had 10 kids, not only was she hearing impaired, not only was she a single mother, not only did we grow up poor, not only did I move out of my house at 18, not only was I allergic to pistachios, not only was I a Jew, not only was I a woman, but now gay too? Today, we're talking about positive disruptions, and female comics, by virtue of what they do, are contributing to positive disruptions. What do I even do as a comedian? Disrupt. It's all I do. And I disrupt ideas and thoughts in such a way that intend to make you laugh, which intends to be positive. But not only are female comedians positively disrupting because of what they do, but because they are women doing what has historically been perceived as a male profession, and every time a woman entered a male profession, she positively disrupted things. Birth was at the Long Island College Hospital in New York City. Mama said it was the best of her 10 births because the hospital had just redone its rooms to look more like bedrooms, which felt warm and nice, unlike the sterile conditions of her last 6 births. The 3 births after me had been in warm rooms too, but were marred with complications. I'm born 7th. I've been 7th my whole life. Many people have names. I'm 7th. There are many studies done on birth order for those born 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. There are traits linked with the eldest, the middle, and the baby. I have yet to read what traits are associated with being born 7th of a 10-children family. But as a case study for 7th-borns, I will say this. I like people, which is good news considering I entered a family after 8 had already been there. Beyond this, things were obviously tight financially. But if things weren't tight financially, then I wouldn't have my school lunch bit. And we all know you can't put a price on a good joke. Growing up, we had the worst school lunches, and my sister is here today, she can attest. I'd get home at the end of the day, Mama would look through my lunch bag. Why didn't you eat your saltine crackers? They're fresh. It's like you'd rather starve than eat salty cardboard. Of course, Mama would get back at me. Can't you trade? We used to trade when we were kids. Don't the kids trade anymore? It's like, Ma, no one wants to trade Oreos for freaking saltine crackers. I'm at the bottom of the trade chain here. So see, growing up poor was worth that joke alone. But people want a further example of, you know, what's it really like to grow up with 9 siblings. I'll give another one. There are 8 popsicles in a standard box. Unless there was a steep sale on popsicles, Mama just bought the 1 box. Which meant that you were running home, racing to be one of the fortunate at 8. It was like playing musical chairs, but with your after-school snack. And privacy was pretty hard to come by, too, which is something you'd think I value more, given how precious it was growing up. But in fact, the opposite has happened. I live my life openly, on stage. In fact, privacy scares me just a little bit. If I catch myself being too private, I know it's because I want to hide something, maybe the way I grew up, or my background, or maybe even something more personal, like my sexuality. Which, actually, shockingly enough, wasn't such a huge other thing for me. See, when you've got 9 siblings, there is another benefit. When you have 5 brothers and 4 sisters, there's got to be someone who mucked up worse than you have. There's got to be the token muck-up. Your only job is to make sure you're not that muck-up. Like, I looked around and noticed that my older brother had a baby out of wedlock with a girl we never met, and my sister was dating an ex-con, so I said, screw it, I'm gay. Nobody flinched. Ultimately, due to a shortage of resources, I did move out on my own at 18 and have been living independently since then. And it was in this time, my first year on my own, that I discovered I was in love with a girl. This was the first really great other thing to happen to me, but it was also another terrible thing because it meant I was gay. Every time another thing happens to me, I've stumbled on some of the greatest things ever to happen to me. For example, when I left my house and moved out so soon, it was so scary and so hard. But on the flip side, for the very first time, I could breathe. I had space. I could figure out what I liked. I had possessions, regardless of how small they were mine. And it was in this time when I was alone and broke in my apartment, that something really great happened. I fell in love and knew for certain what life was all about. Suddenly, it didn't matter that I had Kraft dinner the past six nights in a row, or that school was threatening to put me on probation if I didn't pay the small fee. Suddenly, it was all about love, so who cared about anything else? A great lesson I'm thankful to have learned so soon. But even though I know where I came from, I must admit to you all that I don't know where we're headed. I'm just as scared as most millennials about our future. I think we have it just as hard as our grandparents, if not harder, for different reasons. Initially, when I wrote this presentation, I was standing at the fork of my own road. Up until a couple of days ago, I had been living a double life since the inception of my comedy career. While I had discovered my passion, I wondered if I'd ever gather the courage to ultimately leap into my full happiness and make that jump. I'd obviously watched enough TED Talks to know what the right thing to do was. But the other day, another thing happened. I was offered a full-time position in the writing room of an amazing show, and the job starts Monday. After that, even another thing happened. I was able to quit my job. Writing this presentation has been a slightly miserable experience, I must admit to you all. Mostly because I wasn't sure what to say or why anybody would care. It's also been a wonderful experience because it's allowed me to look at my life in a slideshow-like fashion. And by doing so, I was able to see a constant in my life. I've always been outspoken. Always. My fourth grade teacher may not have appreciated this back then. But she might be proud to know that I haven't hushed and continue to speak out as a person, as a comedian, as a woman. Over the course of my life, I have also seen pattern. Aside from plague and disease, almost nothing happens for nothing. Something I know now that I didn't know when I was first out on my own was that it's all fine. Something will happen. A prong in that fork will be followed. So even though I don't always know why things happen, I do now believe that they've all been for good. I mean, what in the hell would I be talking about on stage if all these things hadn't happened? What would my perspective be? Like yours? Hardly a story fit for comedy. Thank you so much.
Hey, this is Begonia, and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM.
Did you recognize that sound? That's the sound of a healthy, well-cared-for cat. I truly hope you've been lucky enough to hear that sound before. The feral cat population around Kingston and the surrounding areas has grown considerably over the last few years. And thanks to organizations like Kendra's Community Kitties, these feral cats are being fed, medically cared for, spayed, neutered, flea-treated, dewormed, given winter shelters, and placed in loving homes whenever possible.
Hundreds of these special animals have been rescued by Kendra, and many of these wonderful felines are purring right now, safe and healthy.
Wow. But rescuing and rehoming feral cats isn't easy. It requires an enormous amount of time and effort, and there are a few ways you can help.
You can donate to Kendra's Community Kitties on their website, kckitties.com. Even a small amount will help pay for medication, spay and neutering procedures, and food and supplies to keep these felines sheltered and healthy in the cold winters or extreme heat of the summer. Because some of these kitties are not socialized, Kendra has committed herself to provide 22 dishes of food with fresh water every day, 365 days a year, to six feral colonies. Food prices have increased significantly, so donations of food and money are always needed. Funding assists with the process of finding homes for these cats as well, as it takes time and money to find the right individual or family to be matched with the right kind of cat. You can become a foster family for our feline friends. Go to kckitties.com and learn how you can care for and love a cat or even a family of kittens until they can be moved into their forever homes. At the colonies, Kendra plants the seeds of trust and socializes the feral felines when she brings them food at the same time each and every single day. So they're more accepting of humans when placed with foster families. But fostering a feral cat is no easy task. Kendra cannot take these cats from the colonies unless there are foster homes willing to commit to help these kitties gain trust with humans.
You can adopt one of these special cats or kittens. If you've already been thinking of getting a furry friend, reach out to Kendra at kckitties.com and she'll provide you with all the information you need to make this important decision.
Any help you can offer Kendra's community kitties will be tremendously appreciated. Not only by Kendra, but by the lucky feral felines to rescue.
And hey, maybe, just maybe, one day you'll get to hear
Panda say I love you.
Again, the crawl.